Good afternoon. This is Carol Moyle, Committee Assistant Environment and Energy Committee. Today is Wednesday, July 6th, 1:30 p.m. here in Room E. Agenda for today includes a work session on Senate Bill 237B relating to EFU zones and marginal lands.
Of Environment and Energy will come to order. Clerk, if you will please take note of those here, those not here, excused. Let me try to give you our schedule. We will be working. We have some other bills backed up in committee that some people are more than anxious to hear. We will be working on 237 until that comes out of committee. Then we will start tomorrow during session and go through all day with being in and out of the session and call the House. We will leave today for roll call, and then I will just make an announcement to come back to committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Barton.
Could we expedite the process and have hearings on lots of other bills if we just table this one?
Madam Chair.
Representative Drew.
I was thinking of something else. I was thinking that it was getting pretty close to sending the floor. Maybe we could just do that. After all the concessions we've made.
We will have hearings. If we get through with this today and tomorrow, we will have hearings on other bills Friday, and we will start that during session as well. So we plan to work starting at 10 o'clock the next 2 days until we're finished.
Is somebody going to go through these? For this?
Yes. Elizabeth Norman has been called to go through the amendments. We did get them finally late yesterday afternoon. Yes, it would be nice if the rest of our committee got here.
I heard 2:30, and that's all I know.
Okay. Beth, do you know if she's coming right away?
I just called her. She said they're on their way.
Here she comes. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Chair Hooley, my apologies. Elizabeth Norman, Legislative Council, my apologies for being late. We were going through the bill and finding more problems.
Okay. Good, just what we wanted to hear.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Early on, I think about this stage of the game anyway, are we going to have testimony from Russ Ebron regarding the EFU? He's tried to get testimony in several times, and we've never heard it.
We will do that. We will call on a couple other people too for EFU when we get to that. I want to get through the marginal lands and get all of that done first, and then we'll go to EFU and get all of that done. Yes, we will, Representative Martin. Okay, Elizabeth.
Okay, I'll try and just take you through the draft 237B-12 and explain what it says and how it differs from the B engrossed version.
Okay.
Beginning on page 1, section 2 now begins immediately with the marginal lands provisions and leaves out the definition of agricultural land. First of all, simply the commission is required to amend the goals to authorize counties to designate marginal land the same as it was. And then the test is set out, first of all, beginning on lines 11 going 11 through 15 is the income test.
You're still on page one?
Yes.
That's been deleted, hasn't it?
No, I'm not on page one of the B engrossed version. I'm on page two of the B engrossed.
Madam Chair.
Wait, what are you on?
Representative Anderson.
Are we going to go through this presentation and then back up?
Yes.
Are we going to hold questions until after she's done?
Let's let her go through, and if you have notations or questions, please write them on the side, and then Elizabeth, we can go through and ask questions, or we can ask questions of other committee members and whatever, but let's try to go through the whole bill.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, I thought we were going through the amendments you delivered to us yesterday.
That's the bill.
Okay.
That's the bill.
All right.
So you will, this is the bill. We're not looking at the engrossed really at all, except she will tell us some of the differences.
All right. The income test was changed to add in, well, first of all, it says did not contribute to a farm operation, which was the
Madam Chair.
Final language.
Representative Pugh.
As we go through this, I think it would be helpful if we could indicate who was the initial proponent of the amendment that we're making, so we could get some feel for what interactions have taken place in constructing this final bill.
Let's let her go through that, and then we go back, Representative Pugh.
Go back and then ask that question on every single change in the bill. Wouldn't it be better to just state it as we go through?
Pardon?
Wouldn't it be better to state that as we go through? I can go back after she's done and go back and ask who proposed every single change in the bill, but I thought that it would be easier to ask who proposed those as we go through the bill, just indicate where the amendment came from.
I don't know where the amendments came from myself, which ones were whose.
Beth can do that for us. I just thought it would just be helpful if we went through it first. Then we'll go back.
We'll go back and go all the way through it a second time?
Yes.
Okay.
And ask questions, take care of any glitches, where the amendments came from. We can do all of that.
Okay. Just so you're prepared, I'd like to know who made each and every amendment. So proposed each and every amendment. So we'll need to go back through, and every change that's indicated, I'll ask that question.
Yes. Okay.
The income test has also been expanded to include the forest operation capable of producing the $10,000 in income. There's
okay.
There's a problem has been raised about the way this is worded in terms of the 3 to 5 years preceding the effective date of the act.
Is that on the 10,000?
Right. It's in two places in the income test,
right.
On the 20,000 and on the 10,000. There's two things here. First of all, the committee, at least in having me draft this version, in several places has switched from the effective date of the act to a specific date, July 1, 1983. But the other thing is that there's nothing that indicates in this language of how you measure those years. In other words, if a person applies for a designation for marginal land on April 15th of 1983, do they count the income from April 15th to April 15th, or can they, or are we asking them to bring in their 1981 and 82 incomes because they're applying in 83? And the committee, at least at this point, that is not clear, and you might want to make a decision about that, and then I can, it'll be easy enough to draft the language so that it clarifies that.
Okay.
Then in paragraph B, we have the other two additional tests, the alternatives, in addition to the income test. The first one being the parcelization test, which is lines 18 through 21.
That was
And let's see. Then paragraph B, or subparagraph B on lines 22 for the rest of the page, is the soils test. And that is then set out, the alternatives that for the cubic feet per year are set out at the top of page 2. I will probably change that language a little bit to say those counties east of the summit of the Cascade Range and that portion of Douglas County that is east of the summit of the Coast Range, so that there's a specific line.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Traeger.
Would you explain again what you're proposing to change in that line?
I'm just proposing on line 2 of page 2 to say those counties east of the summit of the Cascade Range. And then I would do the same thing on line 3, Douglas County, that portion of Douglas County that is east of the summit of the Coast Range. And then on line 4, because we have some portions of the county left over of Douglas County, instead of saying 85 cubic feet per acre per year in all the rest of the counties, just saying in the rest of the state. So you'd have those specifics set out in little I, and then everything else would be 85 cubic feet per year. Subsection 2, beginning on line 6, is a refinement of the parcelization test. And it indicates that lots and parcels located within an urban growth boundary cannot be included in the calculation, in the test area. And then clarifies that only one lot or parcel exists if they're contiguous. There's a couple of problems that have been pointed out about the contiguous section. First of all, I don't have any definition of contiguous in there, and the committee needs to decide how. Now, the package that I used indicated that contiguous did not include lots that were separated by a road.
Right.
We probably need to say public road. But then the second issue is, if we're going to define contiguous, we should define it consistently throughout the entire bill, so that we don't, if you want to do it differently in marginal lands as to what constitutes one lot, that's fine. But then I would rather not use the word contiguous if we're going to do it differently. So I guess we need to decide what the definition is going to be, where, and then set that out.
Adjacent?
You could use adjacent and then simply say they're not adjacent if they're divided by a public road. If you want to leave the definition of contiguous the same in the other parts of the bill, in the EFU, in the marginal land section where you're actually allowing a dwelling, and in the existing lot of record provision.
Sure.
Representative Traeger.
Isn't contiguous defined elsewhere in the statute?
Not that I know of, certainly not. It's been dealt with regard to land use matters by the courts. And so it's becoming something of a buzzword. And if we're going to give it a definition, which would then override anything the courts have said, if it's different, we should at least give it one consistent one.
Well, I think because when you're using contiguous in this regard, you're using it for a test, and the other places you're using it for the lot of record stuff. Okay.
Then also, it was just pointed out to me by Mr. Niebaum that I wrote this contemplating that lots would only be grouped together as one lot or parcel if they were all within the test area. And I don't think that that actually was the intent, that if a line is drawn and there are contiguous lots and one of them goes outside, that has to be included in determining as one parcel, in determining whether or not they meet the 20, the consisting of 50% of 20 acres parcels and lots. And so I would take the such out, if that is what the committee intended, I would take the such out, so it would just be to one or more lots or parcels, and I could add some clarification whether or not the lots or parcels are actually located within the area described, to make sure that that's clear. But I would like some confirmation of what the committee's intent was about that. Beginning, let's see, lines 14 through 16 are the definition, basically, of what a relative is. And it includes all the different relatives that were in the existing lot of record. But it does not indicate who they were transferred to or from. Okay. Then line 17 through 19 is the provision allowing the county to use statistical objective information. And subsection 4 is again clarifies the parcelization test and indicates that even though you start out when you're doing your creating your test area by talking about a piece of proposed marginal land and then you draw your quarter mile out around it, once you have that quarter mile drawn, you can designate land as marginal in between what was the initial proposed marginal land and that line. And this was my attempt to clarify that. By the looks on some faces, I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, just a repeat of that last sentence.
Okay. The way the parcelization test is set out, it says that the proposed marginal land is within an area which has at least 50% in lots or parcels 20 acres or less in size. So what you do is you pick your proposed marginal land when you start out. It may be one lot, a 30-acre lot, and you draw your quarter mile out around it. Okay? Even though you're calling that your proposed marginal land, once you get that test area created, if other lots within the quarter mile meet the income test, they can also be designated as marginal land. And on line 23 of that section, I would take out partially or wholly, because the lots or parcels, if they're going to, the test area would wholly include them just by virtue of the way the test area is created. Then subsection 5 is just the sentence that ties the designation of marginal land to the uses and divisions that are going to be allowed. I moved the list of uses and the list of permissible divisions out of the language requiring the goals to be amended and put it where and set it out in new sections, which will then be edited into Chapter 215, where the EFU uses and divisions of land are set out.
Again, Elizabeth, what are lines 26 and that ties?
That requires them in the amended goal to say something similar to what they say about agricultural land and EFUs. They say basically
the permitted uses.
You know, you may allow the uses that are set out in Chapter 215 on ag lands, and this indicates that it should say on lands designated as marginal following these tests, you can allow the uses and divisions of land that are set out in Chapter 215. Page 3, subsection 6 and 7 are taken exactly out of the Be Engrossed versions. Page 2, lines 28 through 34. Section 3 is the permitted uses for marginal lands. The language in lines 17 through 24, after having talked with Mr. Niebaum again, I would rework, and I would put the language about the size of the parcel in the section on divisions of land, saying so that it would be set up that you can get divisions of a certain size depending on whether you're located next to the EFU or not. Then simply in the uses allow one single family dwelling on a lot or parcel created under the specific provisions of the division section. I think it would be more clear and technically better. Lines 25 through 27 are the lot of record provision for marginal lands. I believe that on line 26 it should say July 1, 1983 rather than the effective date of this act. Other than that, that's the whole marginal lands test.
Elizabeth, I have a technical question to ask you on that page. I think we did discuss the July 1st, but I thought under when you did the lot of record in marginal land, which was wide open, that you were going to put in accordance with local ordinances and leave out what's in sub 2 with the greenway on page 4. Maybe I'm jumping the gun. Maybe we should get.
Well, I was going to explain that. The way this works is that the marginal lands uses and designations are intended to override other existing ordinances except those that relate to greenway, floodplain, and geological hazard area. And so I had to spell that out specifically and say only in this situation are you also going to have to meet these other criteria. So that was the intent of doing that. I feel that just to say subject to local ordinances would be too broad and would create some confusion.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we'll get back to it. All right.
Okay, on lines, page 4, lines 3 through 5, we have the language for the hardship.
One question, but she left it in.
And then subsection 2 is what we were just discussing, with the Willamette Greenway, et cetera.
Elizabeth?
Madam Chair.
Representative Bradbury.
I just wanted to back up for a minute on the lot of record provisions in 25 through 27. Basically, well, I mean, that's a totally wide open lot of record. It's basically saying any lot or parcel that was created prior to July 1st, well, here, effective date, but July 1st, 1983, you would have a dwelling would be permitted on that lot.
Right.
Period, if it was in marginal land.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts. If the parcel was created before the effective date of the act or whatever.
No.
Right. Any size parcel, any location, as long as it had been designated marginal land.
Okay. And no tests, no farm-related tests, no farm interference tests, no nothing if it was in marginal land.
Representative Parkinson.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's entirely correct. On line 11, it says a county may allow. So a county body could be more restrictive.
Okay.
Right.
But from a state law standpoint, there are no other restrictions in there.
Right.
Fine. Thank you. I just want to get that clarified.
Madam Chairperson.
Representative, please.
Aren't there, if it was associated with a farm operation that had $20,000 income, could it be designated marginal?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wait a minute.
Didn't hear.
I don't understand the uses that we're talking about here, what you may allow on land that has been designated under Section 2. So you have to go through that process of designating the land and having it meet the income tests and either the parcelization or the poor soils.
Before it's designated marginal.
Before it's designated marginal, and this particular lot of record provision would apply, right?
So it's not so wide open, or is it wide open?
Well, once the land is designated as marginal, then it's a very wide open lot of record provision. Section 3. Page 4.
Section 4.
Section 4. We have the allowable divisions of land. And as I suggested when I was talking about the uses, I would switch that language into this section. It'd still do the same thing. It's just a little more consistent and clear English.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Maybe I should hold this to later, but I will the exceptions process, if that becomes law, loosen the divisions provision?
It won't change what you can do on land designated marginal. It's just that you would have another option as to how you actually designated that land under the exceptions process. In other words, if you wanted land that was currently required to be in an EFU zone, you wanted to put a dwelling on it or divide it in a certain way that wasn't allowed in an EFU zone, you could try and fit into the marginal lands, or you could go for an exception.
10-acre minimum we have in marginal. Through the exceptions process, can I make 10 one-acre lots through using exceptions?
In other words, can I take an exception to the marginal lands?
Yes.
That's not what the intent of this was, is that you take an exception to a goal, and you... a hard time explaining exactly what I mean.
Or just say yes or no.
Oh, I don't think you'd do that through the... You wouldn't designate the land marginal and then take an exception to get a smaller lot. You would simply go for the exception.
How would you get a smaller lot, then? Is that locked out by law?
Through the exceptions process, you could try. But not through the marginal... Through the marginal lands, you can get a smaller lot if it's a lot of record. But if you're going to create a lot, if you're going to divide it, you're 10 and 20 as your minimums.
No other process.
Not through marginal lands.
But he's asking, can you get it through the exceptions?
You can try. I couldn't tell you whether it would be approved.
That's up to the county board.
Yeah, they would propose an exception. Of course, that would have to be approved by the commission.
Then... And you're still shaky about whether it would be approved if you were taken to court then.
Oh.
Under the exception.
Well, it's every exception depends on the facts, and it's impossible for me to say whether you could always or never or whatever get a lot of a certain size under the exceptions process. We have to meet the criteria.
If you failed, you haven't got a chance. Under the exceptions process. We've changed the exception process, so you've got a chance now. Is that what you're trying to say?
Okay, I think that's true, that it is the exceptions process is loosened up some under the proposed language.
Ron, just to answer this question.
Ron Eber, Department of Land Conservation and Development. Representative Anderson, when a jurisdiction justifies an exception and the commission acknowledges that exception, that's as far as we go. The counties normally put it in some sort of rural residential zoning, and we don't say anything about the minimum lot size. That's left up to the county. So under the new exceptions process, if there's a built and committed exception or another kind of exception that's justified for rural residential housing, then it's up to the county to set the standard for minimum lot size. It's usually based on slope or septic tank approval or whatnot.
Then if my county said 5 acres is going to be minimum instead of 10, would they go through a plan amendment?
No, that wouldn't even be a plan amendment, if we've approved a large number of exceptions in Douglas County with varying lot sizes, that's usually set out in the zone. The county would simply amend the text of its zone to say, instead of having a 5-acre minimum, we're going to have a 2-acre minimum. So it wouldn't necessarily be a plan amendment unless the county had set that standard in the plan. Most counties don't do that. They leave that to the zoning ordinance.
What are the odds of it being approved by you?
It already has been for Douglas County. We don't review the lot sizes in exception areas, except to make sure they meet septic tank standards, work through the DEQ process.
I think Representative Anderson, too, that all Elizabeth was trying to say is that it's available, but there's never any guarantees under that process. It's just available to be used.
Well, I'm just worried that my county might say we want to allow 5-acre lots, and it comes through the process, and we get appealed and get it disallowed.
It would get challenged and appealed through, I'm not sure what...